I'd get on the tube and there'd be all these men in bowler hats and suits sitting down reading the Financial Times or the Times and never looking at anybody, and I felt completely invisible.
Robin Payne eventually moved to Edinburgh, having experienced the shock of moving from Kenya to London as a young person. This is Writer's Mosaic, What We Leave We Carry, the series that tells the true life stories of migration to the UK.
My name is Robin Payne. I'm an artist, and I've been a practicing artist for most of my life. I was born in the Princess Elizabeth Maternity Pavilion in Nairobi Hospital. My mother had had three children previously by a different husband, one of whom died actually, but she had had one set of twins, and my twin brother and I were her second set of twins. We were born just before and just after midnight. So we have separate birthdays, which led to a lot of infighting as we grew up. We were also the second heaviest twins recorded, the others being just the day before Ingrid Bergman's two twins, one of whom is Isabella Rossellini. Tom and I were convinced, however, that we were mixed up with the other set of twins that were born in Nairobi that night. Growing up in Kenya Kenya is a truly magical country with so many different climate zones. But one of the most magical things you can have happen there, and I'm not sure you could do it now because of pollution, was being able to see Mount Kenya and Mount Kilimanjaro simultaneously. That was very, very rare and very, very special. The other one was being down on the Kenyan coast. Kenya has an Arab culture on the coast, which adds a romance. But seeing by moonlight on the outer edge of the reef off Diani Beach, seeing an Arab dhow sailing down towards Zanzibar, that was also quite unforgettable and incredibly mysterious. Between the ages of, up until 2 years old, my parents always worked, and we had a what they call an aya, and that's a nanny, an African nanny called Joyce. I've got pictures of us with Joyce, and we really, really adored her. After we moved to Ireland for 2 years, when we were two, to live with our grandmother, my parents got a nursemaid to look after us called Mary, and they had to teach Mary some Swahili because that was what we would understand. For instance, they taught her to say chakula tayari, which means your food is ready. Of course, for us, the other thing about being in Ireland was that there were all these exotic fruits which we never had in Kenya, like raspberries and big red hairy gooseberries and apples. So, you know, having got used to mango and papaya or pawpaw, as we called it, and passion fruit, this seemed, you know, to us kind of, we were raving about it, trying to sort of steal them in the back garden. My parents were away for 2 years. They had received a George Bernard Shaw fellowship to tour Ireland, putting on opera with a puppet theatre. And my parents continued that when we moved back to Kenya, when my brother and I were 4 years old. My father had gone out to Kenya as a colonial town planner and architect, because, of course, Kenya was still a British colony, and we saw the last years of the British colony unfold while we were there. He met my mother, who was out there getting a divorce from her first husband. They were both from sort of cultural backgrounds. On my father's side, musical and artistic, and on my mother's side, a literary journalism and writing and editing. My father helped set up painting classes, and my brother and I went to those painting classes. They promoted the arts, and my father established a puppet theatre, and my brother and I were sometimes forced to spend evenings listening to these interminable operas. However, it did instill a future love of opera, so it was probably worth it. As it was still a colony, there were photographs of the Queen and Prince Philip in a great many shops. And if you went to the cinema, you'd have to stand up at the end of the film to the national anthem. So also there was, a governor, and government house was next to our first school, our Hospital Hill School. So we saw, we saw parades, we saw troops. It was all sort of, dramatic stuff. And we picked up ideas from books, of course, picture books, Scottish themes, Robert Louis Stevenson. So, yeah, I was pretty cliched, I suppose. But when we moved to the outer reaches of London, west sort of suburban London in the around 1960, it was a bit of a disappointment, frankly. And my parents decided to send us. My father had gone to study tropical architecture at the Architectural Association. My mother went to work for Wedgwood as a press officer. And my brother and I were sent to the local school, Stanley Road Junior Mixed, first surprise, the girls had one entrance and the boys had another. And so playground time was also quite completely separate. We were really bullied because we had what we thought was an ordinary accent, but our classmates thought we talked posh. And we got bullied a lot about that. The fact that we said we came from Africa, their idea of Africa was like the darkest Africa, the Africa of Tarzan. And so it was kind of, to us, it was when we come from this magical country with, all sorts of different sort of, as I said, not just climates, but you had forests, you had mountains, you had volcanoes, you had waterfalls, you had vast plains and incredibly, exotic wild animals all over the place. To us, it was dumbfounding. My brother Tom was very, very shy. He would get bullied at school, and my mother had sort of encouraged me to kind of keep an eye on him. So I started beating up the boys after school on the pavement. I discovered that they would let me pull their hair, kick them, and kick them to the ground. I really don't know why they let me do it, actually. So, in a way, I guess it helped to stop them bullying my brother. However, one day walking home, one of them persuaded me and my friend Margaret to eat these pods off a tree, which were laburnum. He must have known they were poisonous, because that evening, both my friend and I had to be rushed to Teddington Hospital to have our stomachs pumped. Frankly, I wasn't glad to, when we moved back to Kenya around 1962 it would have been. Yeah. we thought we were going to London at the age of 8. We thought we were going to London for 2 years because that is how long my father's course was. But unfortunately, my parents' marriage kind of fell apart for a bit. We did go back to Kenya, but only to discover that my father was having an affair with another woman. And so my mother took us back to London again. We travelled, interestingly enough, on these wonderful Lloyd Trestino ocean liners that sailed between South Africa and Trieste, and they stopped in Venice for 3 nights. So, you know, my parents were thrilled with that. We would be hauled round Venice and bored to tears with all the churches and the strange food. Things became pretty unhappy for a while, and they patched it up. We moved back to Kenya and we went back to our favourite school, Hospital Hill School. It was a school which was started by an Indian pharmacist who was married to a Scottish lady, John and Joan Kamali. They had a son and a daughter, and there was no school suitable for their children. Mixed race. I can't remember if they were Muslim, but John had very strong connections to the Ismaili community, so they probably were. And so they founded this school, which was, the idea was that children of any race could go there and any colour, and they could grow up colourblind, which actually was how it was. So we were always, you know, later on we'd be absolutely astonished to encounter racism, which of course inevitably we did, you know. But it was a wonderful school. After Hospital Hill School, I was sent to a very, very strict Church of England, Limuru Girls School. It was a very mixed time for me because the swinging 60s was breaking out big time in Nairobi. Nairobi's always been a very glamorous place, actually. It's always attracted, you know, film stars and royalty and this and that. But it also had a sort of strong community of people that were very aware of what was happening in, you know, in London with the changes in fashion and music and film and everything. So we were living that to the full while at the same time suffering in this incredibly strict schools. After about nearly 2 years of this, we moved to London, and my brother and I, of course, were dying to be in London, walking up and down the King's Road, you know, going to Carnaby Street, you know, getting into the whole swinging London thing. I was absolutely overwhelmed by crowds, and I'd get on the tube and there'd be all these men in bowler hats and suits sitting down reading the Financial Times or the Times and never looking at anybody. And I felt invisible. I felt completely invisible, but I also felt incredibly anxious. And I noticed one day walking down Regent Street that I was so tired from walking around all over the place that my anxiety had kind of worn off. It was tricky, actually. One of the things that my brother and I always missed the most was swimming. I think anybody who grows up in Africa probably does a lot of swimming. There's always, you know, even the YMCA swimming pool, coastal swims. We were told never to swim in any rivers because of bilharzia. We swam in the odd Lake Naivasha, but you know, there'd be leeches, so you know, again, there were dangers, but swimming was the thing I think we really missed the most. And everywhere we ever went, the first thing we wanted to know was, is there a swimming pool? Can we swim? One of the things we bought was we found a spider. We found a big spider down a hole, and it was dead actually, but we were told it was a black widow spider, and we bought it in a matchbox to sort of show people, maybe possibly to frighten people with. The other thing we bought was a love of curry. Nairobi had a large Asian population. They were the carpenters, the mechanics. They ran a lot of the shops and building construction and so on. And there was nothing. I've never found anything as delicious as the curries that we could buy or get in Nairobi. So we bought that with us. My brother Tom found that he could play a trick on his schoolmates at this Stanley Road Junior School by offering them a teaspoon of powder and telling them if they ate it, it would make them run around and want to drink a lot. And this, of course, was pure chili powder. In our last year in primary school at Hospital Hill School in Nairobi, my brother's best friend was Samuel Madoka. The Madoka family are quite prominent in Kenya. And Sam's father was the chaplain of the Kenyan African Rifles. But Sam apparently got a crush on me and used to write me love letters, which I never received because my brother answered them instead. And he didn't tell me till we left Kenya that he'd done this. And of course, I didn't find it at all funny. And I made a point when I was back in Kenya when I was 18, I made a point of tracking Sam down at his school and apologising to him for my brother having done that. I used to go to art classes after I left school quite early, actually, but I studied privately for my ONA levels. And I used to go to the City Lit in London to do life drawing and also to do painting classes. And I got quite friendly with the model, Penny, and the teacher of the art life drawing class, Jacques, a Frenchman called Jacques Charoux. And they told me one day they were going to a lecture by a Buddhist monk who'd recently returned from Northern India. And why didn't I go as well? Or not with them, but why didn't I go? So I did go, actually. It was in Helder off Kensington Church Street in a sort of, must be a big house of Quakers or something. And that's where I met or came across this man called Sangharakshita, who had founded Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. And everything he said that night made complete sense to me. And I started going to meditate in a tiny little basement cell near Covent Garden. And so I think I would say that probably had quite a fundamental effect on my outlook philosophically. Buddhism, it's not very perhaps easy when you're young to accept that attachment leads to suffering, but it was probably quite good for me. It taught me to accept disappointments and things like that. I did return to Kenya too. I returned in 1990 to paint a couple of portrait commissions, and it was absolutely magical. I had the most wonderful, magical time there. I ended up staying on and off for 2 years and falling in love with an American academic, and effectively moving to Boston. Now, I think anybody who's grown up in Kenya, perhaps this applies to any country in Africa, it's in your blood. It's absolutely in your blood, and you miss it all the time you're not there. I did wish we'd stayed in Kenya when my mother decided, in my opinion, wrongly, that we should leave Kenya and move to Menorca. I think it was one of her most sort of willful decisions. Of course, school in Kenya was not fun at that point, but, you know, we had a wonderful life there. She was running an art gallery in the New Stanley Hotel, which was the real glamour centre of Nairobi, and she was the first person to show African artists and promote African artists. And this gallery subsequently became known as the Watatu Gallery, which is a major supporter of Kenyan artists. So when we left excitement, and my my father had started going to auctions and buying peculiar things like fridge doors and making sculptures out of them. So, you know, Tom and I had a great social life. So, yeah, I thought that was a big mistake, actually. The Scots are tremendous travellers. You will find Scots people all over the world, wherever you go. And, of course, they're more patriotic than here in Scotland. Great Aunt Eleanor, whose side of the family were Scottish, so I have Scottish blood, used to send us boxes of Edinburgh rock, which seemed, again, unbelievably exotic. And it had pictures of Edinburgh on it. So there was a romantic draw to Scotland. But the reason I actually moved to Scotland was to study, because when I went back to Kenya at the age of 18, I actually went to live with two Scottish artists out in Machakos. They were school teachers there, but they set me up on a daily regime of drawing and painting exercises. And I learned so much from them. So I thought I should go to a Scottish art school. And so that's what I did. I went to Glasgow School of Art. I have been an immigrant in the sense of feeling that I've arrived in a place, although in theory it should be my home country, it doesn't feel like that at all. A feeling of being invisible, a feeling of, you know, again, culture shock and having to work very hard to fit in.
Robin Payne was talking to Clementine Burnley.